And we've got Senator Jacobson calling in from Lincoln. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing much better, thank you. I'm recovering well. I've completed inpatient therapy at Madonna for 2 weeks, and I was released a week ago, and I'm going to go into some intensive outpatient therapy 3 days a week, middle of the week, and so I do plan to drive back to North Platte on the weekends and spend some time in the bank, and I'm just really fortunate. I've had some great care. This was kind of a really strange situation where literally I've been taking immunotherapy to boost my immune system to fight the cancer, which was really skin cancer that metastasized into my right lung. It's housed there. It's not spreading. The doctors are thinking that the immunotherapy that I've been through, particularly this last one that caused the problems, did boost my immune system, and my body may be able to kill off the remaining cancer by itself. So
that'd be great.
I may not need any more treatment and just let the immunotherapy work. But I will tell you, I felt like a frog that was placed in the proverbial pan of water and they started turning the heat up. I really didn't notice necessarily the changes myself, but Julie did. And towards the end of the session, I noticed that my balance was a little bit off, and there were a couple of times when I was going up the stairs and I'd catch my foot and I stumbled a couple of times, and then I had a lot of swelling that Julie noticed, and there, I just didn't, you know, really wasn't necessarily impacting that much day to day, and I could function fine, and finally it just caught up to me to the point where, you know, I went down and literally could not get up. People kind of laugh about that, the ad on TV, I've fallen and I can't get up, but that can happen, and it's probably the most helpless feeling you're ever going to feel, particularly if you're all alone somewhere and no cell phone. But I got great treatment, the problem was diagnosed early, and they put me on medication to reverse it. But now the weird thing is that I'm kind of having to learn how to walk again. Hmm. I'm using a walker for some assistance, but I know when I first went to the hospital, they got my organs all back working again, and it took two people to steady me to walk. And after 2 weeks at Madonna, I'm using a walker, but I can walk on my own. The walker is just to steady myself, and I know I find here in the house that I'm that a lot of times I'm walking, I can literally pick up my walker and carry it while I'm walking on my own. So I'm getting a lot closer. The outpatient therapy should do the final touches on working with my balance to get that back. And they're telling me that this is all reversible. I should be able to, through the therapy, be able to come back to 100% or very close. And so I feel very like one of the fortunate ones. I will tell you one thing, being at Madonna, when you're an inpatient at Madonna, the first time they take you down to the gym to do therapy, and you're feeling sorry for yourself or why am I here, you sit down and you look around and you say, boy, am I lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, there are so many people who really gave me inspiration because, I mean, they've had spinal cord injuries or serious strokes, and they're completely, I mean, they've got no use of their legs or extremities of some kind, and they're on machines that are holding them up so that they can move their legs, and mm-hmm. they're happy they can move their legs. I mean, then people have been there for quite a while. Some haven't been there as long. And so we always have to kind of sometimes look at our circumstances and just thank God that we have what we have, you know, and that it could have been so much worse. And so I just once again want to thank everyone for the true outpouring of really what I see as heartfelt concern. And I just want everybody to know how much I've appreciated their prayers, and I've appreciated them reaching out, and it means a lot.
That's great. Really heartening news there that you gave us this morning. You know, other than focusing on that and making sure you get back physically to where you need to be, there's a lot of things that people don't hear about when the legislature is not in session, but you're practically as busy during the in between the sessions as you are when the legislative session is going on, aren't you?
I am, and I would also tell you, besides getting phone calls from fellow senators about how you doing and how's it going, then it turns into about an hour-long discussion about what we need to get done this next session and some issues on interim studies, and we kind of go right to work. And so that's been good. It helps pass the time. You know, obviously with technology what it is, I'm able to keep in contact with everyone at the bank, and I'm able to talk to a number of my colleagues as on issues that we're getting ready for next session. And the timing of this was pretty good in that these are kind of the dog days of summer, where a lot of the interim studies that will take place right now, and we're scheduling those, generally happen later in the summer, closer to the fall. And so we're doing a lot of prep work. So I'm in contact with my staff on an ongoing basis, and they're doing some additional research and organizing the interim studies. What happens when we go through the legislative session is the first half of the session, the 90-day session, we introduce a whole bunch of bills. We have the hearings and start having debate on those bills in the first session, the 90-day session. We don't get through them all, and so, of course, those bills carry over to the second session, mm-hmm. our 60-day session this next year that starts in January. And so there aren't as many new bills that get introduced during the 60-day session, because we have several bills that carried over from the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
And we also find that I had a bill that the governor asked me to carry. It had to do with ag data privacy. Well, that's a pretty intense, complicated bill. And even though we had the backbone of what I think was a good bill, there's so many unanswered questions. And so we used interim studies in the summer that you need to introduce to have an interim study. And you use that time to take, say, a bill that you introduced or you're thinking about introducing and study the issue and invite, in many cases, comments at a hearing for those who have interest in the subject to give their opinions so that you can make the bill better, either when you're writing the bill, you write the bill better, or if you've already written the bill and introduced it, that you can get good information to make the bill better.
Mm-hmm.
So you fix the bill before you go back to the floor and debate it. And so it's just a good idea to get better legislation. And so I've had a lot of questions when I first introduced the bill from, of course, all the interested parties, the seed companies, chemical companies, equipment manufacturers, and so on. And it's it gives you an opportunity, again, if you don't already know, of who all this touches. And there are no, we've researched, we don't think there's a good ag data privacy legislation anywhere in the nation, and so this could be one of the first ones. And so we wanted to get it as close to right, knowing that it won't be completely right, though, and obviously technology continues to change, and this will continue to evolve as well. But I am concerned that farmers and ranchers want to have control of their data. And when you look at farmers, you're gathering significant input. Many of these software programs, they know exactly what you're planting. You're putting in the information, the hybrids, the chemicals, the rates, the so on. And then they're collecting output when it comes to yield data, really right down almost to the square foot in your farm. And is this information that you want third parties to gather and perhaps sell to others? And then with AI, they're able to amalgamate all that information and potentially use it in other ways. And so I believe, and the governor believes, that I think most farmers believe, and ranchers, that if this is their data, they should have some control over it. Now, there's limitations as to how much you can control it. I mean, these software companies have built the software, and they're gathering it, and so to what extent do they have access to use it?
Mm-hmm.
But we want to build a framework around what's permissible and what isn't, recognizing that you probably will change the fences and bring them closer over time, but try to get some boundaries at least established, and that at least that's my goal. So we'll be having these different studies probably in the fall, and so we're just setting up how we want to handle the studies, and then we want to also do our own research, and then we'll be inviting in testimony from those that have direct interest in it, and hear from them. So that's kind of how that part works. I've got three interim studies that I've introduced LRs to have this summer. The first one's the ag data privacy. The second one really deals with pharmacy benefit managers, and then also the entire pharmaceutical chain, to try to get a handle on where those dollars are going and dealing with pharmaceutical costs and how it impacts others. We did pass a PBM reform bill this year, along with a pre-authorization bill in the legislature this year in my committee, in the Bank, Commerce, and Insurance Committee. So we're really trying to do all we can to really better understand costs involved in the supply chain, who's controlling what, and see if there's more guardrails that need to be put on at the state level. And the third one, and I think every bit as important, is insurance. And we really want to kind of get behind what is driving insurance costs and what steps can we take to better control those. And when I'm talking about insurance costs, I'm not talking about agents or necessarily even in some cases the insurance companies. We're seeing, since the pandemic, we've seen significant escalation in the cost of insurance premiums. Part of what drove that was when the pandemic hit, what happened? Inflation went through the roof. The cost to replace anything because of lack of materials, the supply chain, lack of labor, and all of it went up in price. You can imagine that if you had a house that was damaged, say, hit by a tornado, the cost to replace that house went through the roof. It just exploded. And the insurers, the basic insurance companies, take the first hit, and then they pass the rest of it on to the reinsurance companies, who really almost have an unlimited amount of liability. And so during the pandemic, the reserves for the large reinsurance companies and a lot of other companies were damaged because they've got a cost were out of control. And so they're busy rebuilding some of those reserves. They've been a little more selective on how they renew and what their how they rate customers. And so as a result of that, your cost of insurance premiums have gone way up. But in addition to that, there are other factors, and one in particular identified this last year in the legislature was the practice that certain roofers have been involved in. These are predominantly, we call storm chasers.
Mm-hmm.
A large, say, hailstorm, a widespread hailstorm. You get all of these out-of-town, out-of-state roofers who rush into the market.
Right.
And they're going to fix your roof. Well, they have a practice known as taking assignments. So they come to your house, they knock on your door the day after the storm. We can fix this for you. All I need you to do is sign this assignment, and we'll go repair your roof, we'll deal with the insurance company, we'll deal with all the pieces, make it hassle-free. So you sign it. Well, when you sign it, most people don't realize that you've signed away all of the rights, that so that they have the ability to act, stand in as you, sue the insurance company, and do other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, now these, again, they're out-of-state companies in most cases. A lot of times they hire somebody else to fix the problem that you originally have. But most of them automatically sue the insurance company.
Huh.
And they sue them not only for, I mean, they sue them before they've even said how they'll settle the claim. And so we don't see a lot of it in our part of the state, but you see it quite regular in Lincoln and Omaha. And this practice is causing insurance companies to have to settle claims or pay much higher rates to get the claims settled, and that's just driving premiums higher. And so in Nebraska, we need to remember, people always ask me, why are our insurance premiums so high in Nebraska? And the answer is that the number one claim that we have with insurance on casualty insurance is roof damage.
Mm-hmm.
And roof damage coming from hailstorms and wind. And what does Nebraska have? Lots of hail, lots of wind. And that's what's driving these premiums. And so if you have roofers that are unscrupulous, and they're coming in and leaving, and they're not here when the job's done, not only is that a problem for the locals who later have a warranty problem that a local roofer could take care of for you, they're also dealing with how they're treating insurance companies. And so I'm not here to protect the insurance companies, but I understand that they've got costs beyond their control, and to the extent that we can hold those costs down, we can hold down the cost of premiums and make insurance more affordable. Between property taxes and insurance, these are two huge costs to homeowners, that both of which are going to need to be controlled for people to be in their homes and live comfortably in their homes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Senator Jacobson, we so appreciate you calling in, and thanks for the update, and glad to hear that you're doing better in your recovery, and we'll pray for a continued full recovery for you, but you're still dealing with the business at hand and preparing for the new session starting in January, and we just appreciate all that you do for your constituents out here in western Nebraska, and wish you Godspeed, okay?
Thank you very much, Corey. It's always good to talk to you guys. I'll talk to you next week.
All right.